Hey,
you're listening to Avid Research.
Avid Research.
Avid Research.
An Australian STEM podcast.
Where we answer the questions you never quite got around to asking.
Welcome back to the show, team. My name's Amelia, and today we have another really cool guest on the show. What a surprise. But we have Dr. Nikki from Petgood. So I'm excited because I have pets and, you know, we like them to be good. So welcome to the show, Nikki.
Thanks, Amelia. Thanks so much for having me. It's a pleasure.
Awesome. I'm super curious. What is your job?
Yes, so my official job title is lead veterinarian. So I am a vet and I work with Petgood, as you've mentioned, which is a pet food and products company.
What do Petgood do?
Yeah, so Petgood are a little bit unique in the pet nutrition arena, and we are a European founded company. The company was actually started in Sweden by my CEO. And the unique thing about Petgood is that the main protein ingredient that we do use in our pet nutrition products is an insect protein. So this is an area that's really starting to boom in Europe in terms of using insect protein in products for pets as well as agricultural animals and aquaculture as well. Yes, so that's in a nutshell that Petgood is a company that is highly focused on providing optimum nutrition for pets using sustainable protein source of insect protein.
Awesome. And long-time listeners will know that we're big fans of insect protein here on Avid Research. Are you able to talk about like the insects that you're using?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And so, you know, there are, as I'm sure most of your listeners are aware, you know, thousands of edible insect species globally, but there have been three that have been studied the most for commercial purposes. And of those, the one that we've chosen to work with Petgood is the black soldier fly, or Hermetia illucens is the scientific name. And it is actually the larval stage of this fly species that is harvested commercially for use in feed products. So yes, the black soldier fly.
Are you sourcing, like, this is obviously a European founded company, but are you sourcing the black soldier fly larvae in Australia?
Yeah, and so that's a really great question, of course. And as I said, in Europe, this area of pet nutrition is really taking off, and there are, you know, many companies, pet food companies that are using, it tends to be either black soldier fly or mealworm or cricket protein in products for pets. So for our European products, yes, we work with the global leader of black soldier fly production, who's based in the Netherlands. But yes, you mentioned Australia, and I'm sure your listeners can hear that I'm not European, I'm Australian. So I am based in Australia working for this global team, and we'll be launching some Petgood products in Australia later this year. And we will be using Australian black soldier fly larvae. It's really important. Of course, we could have looked into shipping these products, but that does not really stack up with our sustainability philosophy and credentials at all. And we had a strong preference to find an Australian black soldier fly production partner here in Australia, which we have done. So yeah, we will be using local insect protein for any products that are sold here.
Oh, fantastic. Does that mean you're having to set up like a full supply chain and like actually producing pet food like in a factory somewhere? Like, is that part of your remit as well?
Yeah, so that is part of my role within the Australian arm of the company, absolutely, which is understanding that supply chain, understanding and developing relationships between raw material suppliers and the primary producers, so to speak, and then people who have the experience in pet food manufacturing and right through to the packaging as well, of course, packaging design. So yeah, been some learnings for me with my background as a clinical veterinarian. My main focus in the company prior to the Australian operation was really product development for the European ops, but also technical support for our customers and retail groups, etc. But yeah, I've been learning a lot about those supply chains, as you say, here in Australia. And yeah, super interesting.
Wow, that is a learning curve.
Yeah, indeed. And I've had a lot of support as well. Obviously, the European team is experienced in these matters. So they've, of course, been assisting me as well. Yeah.
What is it about insect protein that works well, I guess, for pet food? Like why?
Yeah.
Why should we kind of care?
Why insects? And again, a great question. And you know, when the founder of Petgood, she, like many others, this is sort of the Petgood origin story, really, and it helps to answer that question for you. But yeah, she, like many others, got a puppy during COVID, and was having all sorts of issues with this puppy's gastrointestinal system and not tolerating various foods. And her and her vet ended up settling on an insect-based product that was available in Europe, and that worked really well for this individual dog. And during this whole process, our founder discovered that on a global scale, pets, cats and dogs, are actually responsible for, the figures are either between 20 or 25% of global meat consumption. And she was just blown away by this enormous chunk of the global protein supply that was, and I'm speaking obviously about traditional protein species here, the hoofstock and poultry. Yeah, she was just blown away that so much of this was actually being diverted to our pets. And she'd at the same time found this, you know, incredible insect-based product that was working really well for her individual pet and was also supplying the protein required. So that is what led her onto the path of founding the company. But insects are incredibly resource efficient as well. So they certainly tick the boxes in terms of nutrition, being a really rich source of amino acids suitable for our companion animals. And they're also, certainly in terms of the black soldier fly larvae, there's been a lot of work that's been done on them to look at the digestibility for companion animals as well. And many studies have shown that the protein or the amino profile of the black soldier fly larvae has impressive digestibility values as well. So we've got a nutritious product there, but it is this resource efficiency that I think really is the impressive part of this protein species. And there's some amazing figures in terms of the land required. If you compare a traditional protein species to, for instance, a black soldier fly larvae, on a gram for gram comparison of protein produced, It's something along the lines of, like, there is 93% less land used by the black soldier fly larvae as opposed to the cow or beef as a protein source. 80% less water goes into producing that gram for gram protein comparison. It's 92% less feed. And then these, you know, the fact that they can be so resource efficient is also matched by the greenhouse gas emissions results as well, where the insects come out as clear winners, and it's around the 94% in terms of they release 94% fewer of the greenhouse gas emissions on that gram for gram protein comparison compared to beef and other traditional protein species. Yeah.
Some of those numbers were quite a lot bigger than I expected.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I know. It's pretty incredible. It's pretty incredible. I agree with you. And I had the pleasure of visiting our insect producer in the Netherlands last year when I had my very first work trip. And yes, as I said, they are situated in the Netherlands, and they're actually, the area that this insect farm is in the Dutch food bowl. So all around the insect farm are many other primary producers, in particular fruit and vegetable processors. And this again plays into the amazing sustainability story of black soldier fly in particular, in that they are one of nature's greatest upcyclers. So the larvae are actually, well, they feed on, in the wild, so to speak, they would feed on dead and decaying matter. And we've all here in Australia, I'm sure, had the experience of opening up the compost bin in summer and seeing various larval stages of various insects writhing around, eating on, you know, feeding on organic matter. And so in a commercial sense, these insect primary producers will actually bring in fruit and vegetable byproducts from nearby other production systems. And that is the feed substrate for these insects, for these larvae. So in the case of the Netherlands producer, there are many potato processing plants next door, basically, that belong to, you know, large fast food operatives that we'd all be familiar with. So all of these second grade potatoes, potato peelings, etc., are literally shifted across a car park and held in large storage facilities, and it is then upcycled. This waste plant product, which would otherwise have gone to compost or landfill, is upcycled into this incredibly rich source of protein, which is the insect protein, which is then able to be used in feed for, yes, cats and dogs, domestic animals, but also, as I mentioned earlier, agricultural species as well.
That's very cool.
Yeah.
Assuming most people listening haven't had the opportunity to walk through an insect farm, are you able to describe it a bit to us?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. It's certainly a unique experience for me. And I must say, yeah, seeing that entire primary production process from the beginning of where the seeing the feed substrate getting shifted across a car park, literally, through to looking at the final product, which is a essentially like a protein meal, very, very similar in appearance to the poultry meals and the beef meals that are commonly used in extruded pet food as well. But essentially there is the brood stock, which is the parent flies, and there is a certain percentage of flies that are obviously kept as breeding stock. And then there are the larvae. So there are the various larval stages of this particular species that are being housed. And they use a very interesting, really interesting systems. And this is where the land resource efficiency comes in. They use vertical integration systems. So there are essentially trays of these larvae that are able to be stacked vertically and housed at perfect climatic conditions for the particular species, provided with the specific ratio of feed substrate that they also require. And they're being farmed, they're being cared for. And then at a particular stage in the life cycle, and this species does have a fairly rapid life cycle as well, like many insects. So it's around the sort of 46 days. And part of that is a pupa type stage as well. So they are harvested at a point where they have maximum nutrition on board, so to speak, of course, for commercial purposes. And the welfare of the larvae is something that is really important to these producers as well. And I know that can sound a little bit like, oh, that's interesting, but they are regarded as they're a food producing species and do need to comply with welfare regs as well. So the harvesting process is certainly performed as humanely as possible. And then there is various processing, drying and processing, etc., that happens after that as well. I was just impressed, I think, with the cleanliness of the actual insect farm and strangely enough, the care and the reverence for this species as well from all of the people that are involved at this primary production level. Yeah, it was a pretty cool place to visit.
That's actually really heartening.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You know, it's often harder for us to empathize with creatures that don't have like faces and eyes that we can see, and it's really nice that they care.
I agree, and it's a question that we get a lot from consumers and customers, because some pet owners are drawn to insect-based pet products because they themselves have their own personal ethics. It might be that they choose to not eat vertebrate animals or are vegan or whatever their personal brand of ethics might be. Insect-based pet food for their omnivorous or carnivorous companion animal makes sense for them. And yeah, so to be able to answer questions about the welfare of the insects really transparently for these customers is very important as well.
You mentioned that like this has kind of taken off in Europe.
Yep.
What is the climate in Australia? Or what is the appetite in Australia?
Yeah, great question. And I think firstly, I would say that the industry in terms of the commercial availability of the protein has developed a little bit further in Europe. So and at the same time, I think the market awareness of these types of products is further developed in Europe. And that's understandable. These products have been on the market since 2016 in Europe, that is. So we're coming up to, you know, getting towards that 10-year sort of period where products such as insect-based pet foods have been around, so to speak. So that is a different situation here. We're certainly not quite as developed in terms of commercial availability of the insect protein and also market awareness and acceptance. But that's one that we are hoping to change and to educate and bring that awareness here to the Australian market for sure. So that will be part of my role within launching products here.
Awesome. Good luck.
Thank you. There are some fantastic insect producers here in Australia. Really, really, really high quality products as well. So we're so keen to be working with some of these groups as they push forward and put their heart and souls into developing the industry in terms of supplying the primary product here as well. So
I feel like there's a bit of awareness of insect protein for human.
Yes.
Like consumption. And I think it's actually part of the primary school curriculum, which is interesting.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. And it is really interesting because I'm obviously speaking to lots of people here in Australia at the moment, people in the veterinary community, clients. I still do work clinically as a veterinarian, very part-time, friends and family. And yeah, you're right. Generally, people will say, yes, I've heard about insect protein. That's really sustainable. Or I've heard that one day we'll all be eating insect protein, et cetera, in this far off dystopian future vision, et cetera. Yeah, so certainly that awareness is growing. And I think that's what's really interesting as well about insect-based pet foods, because whilst we as humans in many Western cultures, we might not be there yet. Like we might not be ready to grab an insect burger or happily eat insects, even though some of our closest neighbors we're aware have been consuming some of these edible insect species for a very long time. But if we can be having the experience of feeding an insect-based pet product to our best friends that is not a bag full of creepy crawlies, it's a standard in terms of appearance. It's a very standard pet kibble, extruded pet food or a wet food. And we know it's insects, but it's pleasant to look at and to smell. Our pet is enjoying eating it and thriving from it. That is, I think, a really important part of the insect-based pet nutrition arena, is that we are helping the humans of this planet to accept this protein source and maybe pave the way for our own species on a global level to look at ingesting this in the future more happily and more readily. Yeah.
How are the vets responding?
Yeah. I think, and we've overall with great interest and curiosity. You know, veterinarians are scientists, so they're super interested in the, you know, what's the amino profile, digestibility, those sort of questions I speak about a lot with veterinary groups. We've got veterinary partner groups in Europe who sell our products. We know that there are quite a few of our customers have been put onto or have been recommended an insect-based feed in Europe because their pet has been having issues with digesting some of the more traditional proteins, and the veterinarian has come to a conclusion that a novel or a new protein diet or a single protein diet could be useful for this pet. And you know, I think we're all a little bit familiar with the concept of food allergies in pets and how it can be linked to either gastrointestinal disturbances or dermatological disturbances. So there is certainly a lot of acceptance of these types of products in Europe. It's a very, you know, it's a much more unfamiliar ground in Australia. And again, that's part of my role here within the company, is that outreach to vets and just discussions. And generally, the Australian veterinary community that I've been speaking with are interested, absolutely interested and curious, and eager to try some samples with their own four-legged friends as well, which is fantastic. Yeah.
Oh yeah, if the vet is willing to feed their own pet, that's a positive sign.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, absolutely. And I've got, some of my lovely taste tester panel of creatures. Many of those are owned by friends who are vets or vet nurses as well. And I'm so grateful for them and their enthusiasm in this area and also the really positive feedback that I'm getting from their creatures as well. So yeah.
I am very curious how you ended up in this job. What was the path like from what did you want to do in high school versus like how did you end up working for a Swedish company expanding to Australia?
Yeah, that's it. That's another question I get a lot of, actually. Yes, well, high school. I've always been very interested in the natural world and absolutely loved anything related to biology as a child and through high school as well. And I initially studied as an undergraduate degree marine biology and worked briefly as a research assistant for a marine scientist. But my true passion had been all along to be a veterinarian. So I went back to uni and went to vet school. And then from graduating there, I did work clinically as a vet and still do. And so I've been working clinically as a vet since 2008. Yes, that's about right. And I love helping people with their pets. I really, really do. My interest in nutrition was also developing at this time. And the link to the Swedish company is a really funny one, but it's the story is that one of the original co-founders of this company, who was involved from an IT perspective, is a Swedish fellow who's a very good personal friend of mine, and I saw on LinkedIn that he was involved with this pet food company that was doing things with insects, and I thought, what is he up to? And why has he not spoken to me about this? You know, I'm the vet. Excuse me. So got on a call with him and he gave me a little bit more background. And I started doing my own research into the insect species that they were using, which is the black soldier fly, and the digestibility studies that had been performed to date in terms of companion animals. And this whole world of alternative proteins for pet nutrition was opened up to me. And it just went from there, really. So I think what I like about the role is that I'm able to combine that real interest in the natural world and understanding more about the insect species that we're using, and being able to work with the nutritionists and entomologists and chemists, etc., that are involved at our insect farm is just amazing. There is so much knowledge there, and they are, you know, technically incredibly skilled at what they do. And being able to combine that with pet nutrition and guiding customers in regards to individual questions about their pet and veterinary partner groups as well. It's a really nice, I guess, broad overview of a lot of different areas that interest me and that I feel I can contribute to. So yeah, that's sort of how I've ended up where I am. Yeah.
And you've landed in a role that is going to be very different, like, over the next couple of years. Like, there's going to be a lot of different stages to go through.
Yeah, I think so. I think there's the launching the products here is certainly going to be different again But a really exciting time, and looking forward to hoping to grow the team here in Australia on the ground as well as we've been doing in Europe as we introduce this concept to the Australian market. But yes, you're right. I think things will be evolving rapidly, which is good. Change is usually positive.
Yeah. Definitely not boring.
No, that's right.
Is it because you're here that they're expanding in Australia? Because Australia is often considered quite a small market.
Yeah, that's right. Absolutely. I think that certainly was the initial impetus. It seemed to make sense. If I'm on the ground here, let's use that positioning to see what we can do with the market here. But having said that, I think the more that the parent company has looked into it, the more interested they are in the Australian market as well. I think Australians have a deep, obviously a deep love of their companion animals, and there's really high rates of pet ownership here. And we've also got a really strong interest in sustainability as well. So, yeah, I think this is a really interesting market to look at getting these products into.
Very cool. Is there any advice you wish you could give younger Nikki?
Younger Nikki. Yes, I think this is probably maybe this is a common answer to amongst your guests with this question, but maybe just have a little bit more confidence and belief in yourself, Nikki, younger Nikki, and for your younger listeners as well. I think there's so much pressure when you're in that high school period to make what are you going to do? You've got to make decisions. You've got to plan and forecast and then make subject choices, etc. accordingly. And that I found that a really stressful process. Younger Nikki found that very stressful because I did think that I was therefore locking out other options or setting myself on an inflexible path. And, I could never have predicted that I'd be doing what I'm doing currently as a 16-year-old. No way. And I think if my story can demonstrate that there, you never quite know what opportunities might just pop up, and paths can be curvy, and that's okay. So I think I would say to younger Nikki, try and take a deep breath and relax, and the future is the future has many potential opportunities, so don't stress.
Which is really hard when you're in like this pressure cooker and everyone's like, what are you going to do? And you don't have enough information because you just can't.
No, you can't. And you don't have life context either. And so I know that will be the message. I've got two primary school age children, and I know what message I'll be trying to impart onto them when it's their turn as well. But yeah, so many opportunities out there, especially in STEM, and so many interesting areas that people, if you have the passion and the drive that you can get into. Really exciting world. Yeah.
But also constantly changing. Like, this job didn't exist when you're in high school. Like, we weren't talking about insect, I assume.
No.
We weren't talking about insect protein yet. And just imagine like what your kids are going to, what opportunities they'll have. It'll be totally different to what is available now.
So true. It's just so true. Yeah. I couldn't agree more.
I did forget to ask, what do you feel like is the most exciting part of your job at the moment?
Yeah, as I said, I am learning a lot. The steep learning curve of working commercially. So that I'm finding that quite exciting. And on the team is the parent team are obviously people that are skilled in marketing and branding and operations, logistics, and all of these areas that me as a little old clinical veterinarian really didn't know anything about. And so I'm finding that really, really that diverse skill set of my internal team, but also people that I'm working with in terms of manufacturers, etc., and understanding those completely different flow patterns of different industries. Really, really exciting. Yeah. Never thought I'd say that, but here we are. Always had such a science drive, but yeah, it's always interesting learning new things and learning about commercial operations is, yeah, very different for me. So
That's lovely to hear, because particularly when you talk to academic scientists, they're like, oh, I don't know about industry.
Yeah.
And I think there are a lot of opportunities in industry.
There are. And look, I've got quite a few people that I went through vet school with who've shifted into industry as well, like other pet nutrition groups or pharmaceuticals. Those are sort of the two big vet industry groups that vets tend to move into. And yeah, I think in terms of my colleagues, they've loved that transition. Yeah. So I guess it's just all about where your passions lie and where you can see yourself developing as well. Yeah.
I think that's lovely advice. I feel like there might be a couple, but are there any myths or misconceptions about, particularly, let's just narrow in on insect like protein for pets, that you'd like to take this opportunity to do some myth busting off?
Sure. Yeah. I think people get a bit worried about where are the insects coming from. And so I've probably gone over that in this chat, but that's a question we get a lot, because I think people sometimes think, are we just catching insects from the wild? Are we running around? You know, what we've had questions about the ecological damage that we could be doing by removing insects from the wild, etc. So that's a big myth that we bust regularly, is that the insect protein is from commercial primary producers and we're not displacing wild creatures from their natural habitat. And look, it's a fair point of confusion, because it's still a fairly novel concept for many people. Also about the insects, especially because the species we use is called the black soldier fly, and we do refer on our packaging to black soldier fly larvae. But having said that, people are still concerned about is there going to be actual flies or actual larvae within the bag of the product? Will they see something that for them is maybe a little bit unsavory or make them feel a little bit squeamish? So then discussing the insect protein meal and what that looks like and how that's just an ingredient, and there are many other ingredients in the pet products. So that's another part of the myth busting, certainly, that we do commonly as well, that we perform.
Yeah.
Do
people have concerns about the hygiene? Because we sort of associate larvae with being icky. Dirty.
Yes. That's another one as well. We'll get concerns about the hygiene. And I think once you explain to people how controlled these insect production systems are and the feed substrate, the way that the quality assessment and quality controls that are performed on the feed substrates in terms of testing for everything under the sun prior to these being fed to the insects, and that these are pre-consumer plant-based byproducts. So this is not just scraps from a bin that are being fed to the insects. It's not a bit of roadkill that's being fed to the insects. It's a super controlled setup. Then is able to provide a lot of comfort and confidence that, okay, these are not larvae that are wriggling full of pathogenic bacteria, etc.
In an absurd way, I'm loving imagining what other people are imagining when you're talking about.
Yeah, it's a real conversation starter, because I think everyone's got a strong opinion about insects, and especially larvae, or that's their I guess more politically correct name, but maggots. A lot of people will be, oh well, so it's maggots, is it? And yes, that is a colloquial term for that stage of an insect life cycle. So yeah, I think it's certainly a conversation starter for sure. Yeah.
Yeah, people will happily talk to you at parties, I would imagine.
That's right.
Fantastic. Is there anything we haven't touched on that you'd like to share?
We've covered some good ground here, haven't we, in the in the discussion as well. I think just on that last point about the cleanliness and the hygiene, and I mentioned pathogenic bacteria, but a really interesting side area of this particular protein species that's being looked at really closely in academic groups is that there appears to be quite a few different functional benefits of black soldier fly larvae. So we've talked about they're, you know, just a really good source of protein and fat, but they're certainly being really closely looked at for the antimicrobial properties that they present. And this comes down to the actual immune system of this species and a number of insect species as well. But if you think about where we do see quite a few fly species laying their eggs and having their young develop, it's often in really highly pathogenic environments, you know, rotting carcasses, etc. And that's where these larvae live and thrive in the wild, so to speak. And hence, you know, thus they have very highly developed immune systems. And it's the presence of certain antimicrobial peptides and also some of the components of the triglyceride lauric acid that's present in large quantities in these larvae as well, actually has been demonstrated to have antimicrobial properties in vitro. So there are groups around the world that are essentially looking at extracts of black soldier fly larvae as new antimicrobial products in human medicine. So drug design for the ever-continuing antibiotic arms race that we appear to be having in terms of antimicrobial resistance, which we all know is a problem around the world. But yeah, that's a little aside as another area of interest in insect species and another application of the black soldier fly aside from nutrition.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
I had no idea that was going on.
Yeah,
that's
really
cool.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Yeah. It's quite incredible. And I think in terms of the antimicrobial peptides, the black soldier fly has one of the largest repertoires, so to speak, of these peptides that's been documented compared to most other insect species. So yeah, they're quite a powerful little species of great interest academically.
I love that. You just needed someone to be curious and be like, but how do you survive in there?
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah, exactly right.
Yeah. It's something I've always just never thought about.
Yeah. But
yeah. And my understanding, I've started to see ads pop up for the frass, the poo, for gardening purposes as well, which absolutely, like the whole life cycle is useful.
Yes. Very cool. Yes. And that's an area that I do not know as much about because it's, yeah, not a product of the black soldier fly that we've sort of, you know, obviously looked at, but I'm certainly aware. Yeah. That again is really taking off a little bit like worm castings and things. Yeah. Worm farm tea, but yeah, it's essentially the manure from the insect species is being marketed commercially as a fertilizer, and it looks like a fantastic product. So really exciting.
To start wrapping up, have you got a shout out or a virtual high five for someone or someone's who you think's doing an awesome job? You'd just like to shout out to them?
Yeah, I think I'll do a shout out to our insect partner in Europe, which is Protix, and I have referred to them a couple of times. And yeah, look, they are incredibly advanced in what they're doing in regards to black soldier fly rearing and production and processing. And they're a fantastic partner for me to work with as well because of their knowledge base. So yeah, that's my virtual shout out today.
Awesome. Okay. High fives to Protix.
Yeah.
And also just I'd like to give a shout out to all the insect farmers in Australia who are like giving it a go and yeah, doing something a bit different. It's brave and it's really cool.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, full agreement with you there. And yeah, some amazing producers here as well. Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you so much for coming on the show, Dr. Nikki. This has been absolutely fascinating and delightful, and we're excited for the launch of Petgood in Australia.
Thanks so much, Amelia. It's been a real pleasure having a chat with you.
Thanks for tuning in. If you like this episode, please pass it on to someone else who you think might enjoy it as well. And if you want to support Avid Research this year, that would be amazing. You can buy us a coffee. Head to avidresearch.com.au and there'll be a link, buy me a coffee, and you can support us with a one-off little coffee payment. Thanks so much for listening. You're a legend.